HarperCollins presents Polo Stan by Neal Stephenson. Read by January Lavoie. To Seamus. What men are poets who can speak of Jupiter if he were a man? But if he is an immense spinning sphere of methane and ammonia, must be silent. Richard Feynman. Prologue. The Golden Gate, October 1933. The engineer hadn't ridden the rails hobo style since his getaway from the massacre in D.C. more than a year ago. Back east, he'd hopped freights from time to time just to show that wearing a suit and tie hadn't put him on the wrong side of the class struggle. Out west, though, the distances were just too vast, the trains too few and far between. Getting stranded in the middle of nowhere could be fatal. So on the long-haul trips between Gary and the Golden Gate, he was happy to let the steel company buy him passage in a Pullman coach. Consequently, he lacked a hobo's ingrained knowledge of how California's railway lines were hooked up. He'd looked at maps. The steel company had plenty of those. The lines, twin filaments of metal, a ton of steel in every 8 yards of track, drained down from the high, wild reaches of Oroville, Calistoga, Fruto, Thrall, Bray, Weed, Raisin City, and Mount Diablo. There was no guessing what such places might be harboring some offshoot of Dawn's weird, difficult kin. She could be coming from practically any direction. Eventually, though, the railways did converge on a few trunk lines that groped around the bay and tried to get as close to San Francisco as geography would allow. One swung through Vallejo in the north, sliced down through Marin, and terminated at Sausalito. From there, you had to take a ferry to Oakland or San Francisco. The engineer was presently engaged in trying to put those boats out of business by constructing a mighty bridge across the Golden Gate. His work took him over to the Sausalito side all the time. He had agreed to meet Dawn there this morning. She'd got a telegram to him mentioning a time. When he was a boy, he'd been kicked in the face while milking a cow. They'd put his head in a new kind of machine and shot a thing they called an X-ray, side on. Looking at the film in the doctor's office through the one eye that wasn't swollen shut, he had been struck by the soft convolutions of the oral cavity, defended from the dirty world by wrapping systems of lips, jaws, and gums. Where it really mattered, though, teeth erupted from the flesh. People thought of them as the centerpieces of smiles, but the X-ray had made it obvious that they were weapons. Expensive and complicated ones at that. So it was at the entrance to the bay. Scrub-covered hills, pleasant enough to look at, were the outward form of the bay's converging jaws. But humans had studded them with fangs. Forts, bunkers, and gun emplacements embedded in the extremities of the Presidio and the Marin headlands, zeroed on the gate, ready to bite and crush any foreign fleet seeking to force the passage. Other than that, those cold and wind-lashed points had attracted very little human activity until recently. But as the engineer walked down the slope and around the sweeping curve of Lombard Street, he came in view of a materials depot and a logistical complex that had sprung up around the old fort since January of this year. The country as a whole might be bogged down in depression, but it had somehow resolved to send a lot of steel and a lot of men to this one place to get a thing done. And as much as he hated the country and the people who ran it, his engineer's heart thrilled to see it. Once you got past the Army Hospital and the little airfield, Lombard's pavement had simply been pulverized by the wheels of heavy trucks. It frayed into dirt tracks and fanned out into an earthen ramp that plunged into a crowd of jostling barges in the lee of the point where the old fort squatted. He did not have to wait for ferries. In his billfold was a pass that empowered him to go through any gate, to climb aboard any of the small craft that continually shuttled across the Golden Gate on bridge business.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?